Okay, so this is season 3, episode 32, but I feel like we should call this season 3, episode 33, because you and I just had a wicked podcast on ramp that is just was needed, right? Like, we needed to talk about a couple of things before we hit record. So I feel like that time that we just had talking about stuff that we didn't record was valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got me thinking, it's kind of propelled my thinking into a different place around the same theme of what we were talking about. So this is what I want to hit you with. And I'm going to call this an express episode, because according to my clock, we're only going to be on for another 19 minutes before I shut this thing down. So this is
the curbside episode.
Okay, curbside. Is that what we're going to call the quick ones?
If I can, yeah, I love that. Perfect. Okay. The curbside. This is like the story you told me about going to the Lank, driving up, you pop your trunk, they drop the barbecue in the trunk, they close your trunk, and away you go.
Okay, so this is curbside pickup, decoded podcast. Okay, our first ever. This is awesome. I like this.
Goes well actually, with our shack out back kombucha.
I was going to tell you, I had this idea today. I wanted to take our hour and split it into two or three different podcasts on purpose. And we didn't have a chance to talk about my idea, but I like the curbside podcast style. So here we go. What I want to talk to you about today in our short time, I've been seeing a lot of really funny remote learning, distance learning, emergency learning memes, and they're funny. Like, I look at them, I read them, and I laugh. Is it right? Can we in education, the educators, the people who are participating, who are leading this remote learning, this distance learning, can we have a sense of humor? Can we laugh at ourselves? Can we laugh at the situation we're in? Or is it gauche to do so? So I have a great example for you. Just let me bring it up on my phone so I can describe it. I think it's hilarious. I'm loving every minute of it. I'm going to answer my own question and tell you that I don't think that me enjoying the jokes is taking away from my professionalism. I think if you got to look at my life. I've got my real life that happens all around me every day, and my teaching life, where every morning I wake up and I post work for my students and I communicate with my students throughout the day and I give them feedback on the work that they hand in. And I've been doing that over and over and over again. I think it's at 32 or 33 actual legit days of me leading them. But there's also my Facebook, there's my Twitter, and people are sharing funny things. So there's this picture, and it's these two guys building a brick wall, and the bricks are like all wonky and all over the place. And it says underneath it, it says, teachers continuing with online learning, even though only two kids are working, the grades don't matter, and nobody cares. And when you look at the picture, I'll show you the picture. That's the picture. And the bricks are they're not straight anymore. They're in there, and the wall is going to be built. And the wall is going to be sturdy, but it's certainly not being built in a way that most normal people would build a brick wall. Is it okay for us to laugh at these things and to enjoy them? Even though on the flip side, we are, yeah, okay. So there is some truth to that joke. Some days I only have a few people kind of show up, so to speak. And I do care about my kids learning, but it's kind of weird. Like, there are no grades. It's all just feedback. And it seems like in my case, school's taken a back seat for some of these people. I'm enjoying the jokes. I'm enjoying the laughs, because in my world, I can separate the two. What I do professionally is professional, and what I do for fun is fun. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I think I'm observing it in a different way. So one of the layers that I was curious about with COVID response, and not just within education, but just the general COVID response, is that I was walked from the moment that we went. So I have no background to fully explain this. So for anyone that's not watching the feed, I'm kind of using my hands to show a curve. The whole thing about flattening the curve to me, here was my kind of, this is what my brain did when I really started thinking about flattening the curve, is that I looked at the curve, not just it related to COVID cases, but I looked at it as well as like an social emotional response curve. And that the idea or the concept of flattening the curve was also suggestive of bringing down the emotionality of it. So bringing it down into kind of like a manageable space, away from the hype, away from all the heightened reporting and energy and paranoia. So all the heightened emotional stuff, flattening the curve to me was also, what are the, I don't know if it's tools, could be tools, but do we notice that the emotionality around this comes down? And my thinking was, as the emotionality came down a little bit, it would provide easier access or easier stability for people to walk along that curve and access the conversation about what was going on in COVID. So as you watched socials, and I'll take it from, from a teacher's perspective, initially there was a whole lot of heightened responses to, how are we ever going to do this? Could this ever happen? What's the, you know, there was a lot of really cataclysmic thinking. And then slowly it started to shift into little individual pop-ups in that chaos of people kind of saying, well, I'm going to try to sort of do this. It was just kind of like simple little, like, here's what I'm thinking I'm going to do. And then it moved into, as other jurisdictions opened up, people started to talk about their classrooms, right? So because, you know, no matter where you're sitting in your feed, one of the craziest things is to believe that your feed is actually local, and that what you're reading in your feed is happening around you. If you're doing it, if you're broad enough, you got to look to see where some of these people are tweeting from. So there was a whole lot of, there was another little spike in the emotionality as people started to post their responses to the COVID. Like, it popped up again. And now we're kind of in that other spot where I think in a lot of ways, the emotional curve around COVID is pretty flattened. People are openly talking about their lesson planning. They're also talking about the connection with kids. They're also talking about equity. Like, there's a whole broad range of topics that I think could only happen once we kind of got to, you can either say the other side of the curve, or when it got flat enough for more people to be able to kind of move it along it comfortably. In the beginning, it was just the people that were sort of triggered that were wanting to make it over the top. They're like prepared to go there because they were so over the top. As the lines came down a little bit, the emotionality came down, more people started to be able to make it over that hill. One of the things that I was thinking about in that emotional curve originally was around what happens, because I was very much kind of sticking in the compassionate response side to COVID. And I wondered to myself, because initially there were a few people that weren't just saying, going from how are we going to do this to, well, maybe I could do a handout this way, or maybe I could do a lesson this way, which were just like bits and pieces in my feed. There were some people at the beginning, on the front end of that emotional curve, saying, we just got to go back to school. They were just like, boom, this is a joke. This isn't real. This is fake. Like, I want to be, you know, this is a democracy. I should be able to go back. Like, people that were declaring their basic like independence from the science, and I think the conscientiousness and the compassion. So in the beginning, it started to make me wonder, at what point on that emotional curve will we kind of emerge on the, not dispassionate, but how far will the compassionate response take us? So people sort of saying, we really need to be sort of like caring and concerned and connected, right? To sort of make it through this. Part of what I think has happened on the other side of that emotional hill is that compassion has just, it's become lesser of one of the emotions in there, because there's a whole lot of other things going on. And what I've started to see coming out of the compassion a little bit is the humor. And if I look at it on a, if I take it really, really personally, and I take it from the point of view of like when you grieve something, in some spaces you can come out of, or in your grieving process, in my grieving process, I've had moments of humor. I've had moments of like wanting to crack a joke, or a funny memory comes back through there. Maybe it just occurs to me initially, you know, you're kind of just making jokes to yourself. And then the next layer kind of inevitably is that you share with a trusted individual, or it pops up as the two of you share a common experience. So I'm seeing the humor in really as a kind of a natural step at this point in kind of the processing and grieving curve for individuals dealing with however they feel about life, school, their reality of dealing with COVID. You know, do I laugh at some of them? Yeah, I look at them and I kind of, for one part of the reason that I think I laugh at them, it's partially because if I laugh, I'll have a guffaw. If I think it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe someone said that. But sometimes what happens is, as I'm sort of saying, I can't believe someone said that out loud, side thing that I'm saying to myself is like, yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing, but I don't say it out loud. So I feel that connection to what someone has kind of like done that blurt factor. There are ones that I think to myself, those are intentionally cruel. Like they're targeting. It's too targeted. It's not a general clever observation of where we're at. So some of the cruel ones are just like, yeah, block, erase, delete. One of the things through all of this is from the beginning, my in-laws have constantly sent me emails of sort of like jokes and funny things that pop up around COVID. And those things kind of run 50-50 as to whether or not I think it's just generally clever and funny, or like kind of targeted and like zing, like it's just getting, it's they're completely dispassionate, right? It's kind of like went too far. So for me, it's to choose. Have I been cracked up by them? Yeah. Have I, a few of them kind of went, oh, I can't believe someone would post that. Yeah. So, but I think it is okay. I think it actually is. I think if you feel affinity, if you feel connected to it, I think it's good. It's a good reflection on how you're kind of feeling right now about, you know, your status in life, school, COVID connection. I think it's very human. I think it's a humanizing moment.
A couple of things you said really resonated with me. One of them was the whole idea that when this whole thing started, this remote learning, distance learning, emergency learning, I don't even know what to call it. I'm going to call it home learning for now.
What do you want to call it? Like what, like I know you're,
I'm conflicted, man. I'm conflicted because
like, I don't like distance learning.
I don't think I like the teacher led thing, because I led in classroom. I do teacher led learning. You know, I do err on the emergency side of things, because I feel like this is an emergency. This whole thing is an emergency. Somebody pulled the fire alarm and everybody left the building and have not come back because we can't get back safely.
Yeah.
So we're living remotely and in an emergency kind of way. Now, hopefully not everybody's still feeling like it's an emergency, because that level of intensity within yourself emotionally, even physically, is harmful to you. You can't run on adrenaline for an extended period of time. It'll kill you, guaranteed. Like, it will harm you. So, but it is still an emergency. It is still whacked out. But you've said a couple of things that really hit home. One of them is that when this whole thing started, there were lots of people looking around saying, how are we going to do this? How in the world are we going to do this? And now, I don't know, 8 weeks later, we're doing it. Everybody seems to be in a groove. I'm not saying that people are feeling comfortable with it. I'm still wrestling with that comfort level. It's not comfortable, but I've survived 8 weeks. So obviously I'm doing something to be able to create things for my students to engage with and learn from, right? Something good's happening there. So when you're talking about your position on this, that was the first thing that came to mind, is that, hey, we've all survived 8 weeks. We're not saying it's easy, but we're saying that we've obviously figured out a way to make it work. Number one, which makes me think that we can make anything work. We just need to start. We need to acknowledge how we feel about it, whether it's like freaking us out or not, and then start with the baby steps and just start doing things. And then from that doing and trial and error, we figure out what works, what doesn't work, how long things work for, yada, yada, yada. It's all good. The second thing is, and I wrote this down because I thought you hit the nail on the head, is I wrote down, is humor the sign that we are coming out of this in the right way? And I think I want to say yes, because you're right. When something happens that's awful, everybody's in a state of mourning. Everybody's in a state of like a serious mode. And as time goes on, you learn to live with what occurred. Now, this doesn't apply to everything, but in this situation, when you look at, you know, the Google Meets we're having with kids and, you know, the memes of teachers sitting in a corner all alone and then somebody saying this is what you feel like at a Google Meet when your kids don't show up for your office hours. Like, there's some truth to those things and they do make you laugh. And some of them, like you said, are just like, they're cruel. And you block, you delete, you like, that's not funny. Somebody does think it's funny, but I would say the general public don't. And then there's the whole, I can't believe somebody said that. You know, I can't believe somebody said that. And I understand what they're talking about because I feel it every day. Mm-hmm. But the way you were explaining it made me think bad things have happened to many people. And there comes a point where I think a majority of the time you can laugh about it. You can see the humor in it after the seriousness is gone. And after the state of emergency is over and after the adrenaline stops flowing, I find in my life experience and the people I've talked to that 98% of their experiences, they can laugh about. The 2% that they can't laugh about are like life altering, really deep type stuff. And I respect that, you know. Even I can now laugh about some of the things I've talked to you on the podcast. Like, I can now laugh a little bit more about my English teachers, the way they treated me, and the way I've kind of come out on the other end. I can laugh about it a little bit now, more so than before. But there's a process to it, right? There's a process. Anyway, that's what I was thinking about. Can we... And I'm not going to name this person. I don't want to give away their identity, but somebody who I respect said to me, this person posted something on Facebook and somebody responded to them and said, this is horrible. I can't believe that you would share this and you find this funny. And their response to them and to me was, hey, it's Facebook. Nothing on Facebook that I'm doing is legit. Like, it's not... I'm not here to have in-depth conversations about philosophical truths and non-truths. I'm here to kick back, to see my buddies, to joke around. So if you don't think that's funny, and to be honest with you, the thing this person shared, it wasn't cruel. I mean, I guess it depends on your perception, but it was not cruel. It was kind of stupid humor, but not cruel. And if you know this person, you know that's not how they roll. So long story short, he said to them, hey, relax, it's Facebook. Mm-hmm. If you're at my work with me in my office, then yeah, talking like this would not be appropriate because it's not the time or the place, but this is Facebook. And I like that my friend sees the line that I see. There's a line. Like I said, because we're teachers, you and I, we live by a code. We live by a set of standards that are with us all the time. You can't take a break from being an Ontario certified teacher. According to the College of Teachers, there's no break. You are always a teacher. Mm-hmm. You're always a certified, qualified professional, and therefore you are expected to operate that way. Fair enough. I can see a joke and I can laugh at a joke. That's different than publicizing it and endorsing it or whatever. So I appreciate you indulging me with that question. Before we go, I want to thank the sponsors that we don't have for this podcast. And broadcast of this podcast is brought to you by nobody except Chris and I. So I just felt like putting that out there.
But you know, just if I can, could I add to that just for a sec? What I will say is that there is a whole, like, even prior to the on ramp, there's groups, there's individuals that inspire the conversation on the weekly. Like, it's our interactions with our Twitter feed, you know, our Instagram feed, like the people that we meet on the street, like this all comes into it. So there is a whole sort of hidden support system here of thought sponsors that just really kind of get us kind of like ramped up for the week, right? Like, there's living that happens away from this podcast, which I hope for some people when they're listening, they're realizing, like, it's not, though it's improvised, it's fed from our weekly interactions. And that's really, it is key. And for me, that's such a treasure in being able to kind of land with you at the end of the week as we do and kind of bash about the ideas a little bit. I appreciate that for sure.
It's true. And I appreciate the thought fuel that comes from the conversations we have, the interactions we have all week, but there is nobody hanging anything over our head to get us to operate a certain way on this podcast. This podcast is you and I talking about our lived experience, which involves communicating with others, interacting with others, joking with others, reading things that other people have written or videos they've created. We use that to, you know, it's thought fuel. It gives us ideas. It provides us with things to talk about, and we move from there. But there's nobody hanging anything over our head saying, I'll give you this if you do this.
Yeah.
And I'm appreciative of that at this point in the game.
I am too.
There's no advertisement that I need to keep here and refer to three times during this podcast to make this podcast happen. It's not happening. Anyway, thanks for the curbside pickup podcast episode. Oh my God. That looks like it looks chaotic, Chris. That ball of energy. I want to call it a ball of energy. He just showed us the picture that he drew. And it looks like you have to see it. So he's going to tweet it. Check it out.
Cool, man.
Thanks for the curbside pickup.
Close the trunk. Drive away.
We're out. See you, Chris.
Ciao, man.